Thanks for joining us. You can always catch the latest sermon online, but we sure would love to see you join us in person to celebrate and support each other in our love for God, our neighbors, and this church. We are South Britain Congregational Church. No matter who you are or where you are on life's journey, you are welcome here. And now, enjoy another great Sunday sermon, and we hope to see you soon.
We're looking at the adventures of Paul, and we're just taking little snapshots here and there of his ministry. And today, we have the speech that he gave in Athens. And I'm using Eugene Peterson's The Message, which is a paraphrase. It's where someone has taken the Bible text and put it in their own words. So Paul took his stand in the open space at the Areopagus and laid it out before them. "It's plain to see," he said, "that you Athenians take your religion seriously. When I arrived here the other day, I was fascinated with all the shrines that I came across. And then I found one inscribed to the unknown God. I'm here to introduce you to this God so that you can worship intelligently and know who you are dealing with. The God who made the world and everything in it, this master of sky and land, doesn't live in shrines or need the human race to run errands for him, as if he couldn't take care of himself. He makes the creatures. The creatures don't make him. Starting from scratch, he made the entire human race and made the earth hospitable, with plenty of time and space for living, so we could seek after God, not just grope around in the dark, but actually find him. He doesn't play hide and seek with us. He's not remote, he's near. We live and move in him. We can't get away from him. It's interesting here, Paul is making a reference to a Greek philosopher. He's actually quoting a Greek philosopher. And remember, he comes from Troas, where he's had experience with non-Jewish culture as well as his own. We live and move in him. We can't get away from him. One of your poets said it well. Here's one again. We are God created. Well, if we are God created, it doesn't make a lot of sense to think we could hire a sculptor to chisel a God out of stone for us, does it? God overlooks it as long as you don't know any better. Very literally, it's God winks at the past. But now the time has come. The unknown is now known. He is calling you to a radically changed life. He has set a day when he will judge the entire human race, and everything will be set right. And he has already appointed the judge, confirming him before everyone by raising him from the dead. At the phrase "raising him from the dead," the Greeks had no background for this. At the phrase "raising him from the dead," the listeners split. Some laughed at him and walked off making jokes. Others said, "Let us hear this again. We want to hear more." But it was the day for Paul, and Paul left. There were still others, it turned out, who were convinced then and there, and they stuck with Paul, among them Dionysius the Areopagite and a woman named Damaris. In one of the churches I served, I actually had an older woman who was named Damaris. And when I went to see her, she said to me, "Do you know my name?" I said, "Damaris, do you know where that comes from?" "The Bible." She was one of the women who believed in the resurrection. She said, yes, and I believe in it too. And it was interesting, her family, when she died, and I had the service for her, I mentioned that she took her name very seriously. And her family thought she was just a crackerjack at parties. You know, they had no idea there was this other side to her. But that's Damaris. Okay. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. Amen. St. Paul, the missionary and theologian, is one of the great figures of the early church. And this fall, we've been looking at some of his adventures. We've sort of been taking snapshots here and there to give an impression of his ministry. And if you remember, in previous weeks, we've seen his conversion on the road to Damascus. Last week, we looked at the dispute over John Mark and the actual character change in John Mark himself. And today we look at his speech that he gave before the Athenians. And I think it ranks up there with one of the great speeches, similar to Lincoln, similar to Churchill. He's up there. Okay. Now, just use your imagination a bit. It's darkness at night and a square-shaped ship. With a sail, square-shaped sail, comes into port at Piraeus. Piraeus is the port for Athens. The ship docks, and at first light, Paul and the passengers disembark, and Paul rents a donkey to go up to Athens. And with a lot of ancient cities, it's not like New York, where the port is right there in the city. The port is in one place, and the city is further inland for defensive purposes in case there's an invasion. So Paul rents a donkey to go up to Athens. And on the way, he notices, you know, some of the stone walls are beginning to crumble. It's an indication that the city of Athens is not what it once was. I mean, this was the city of Hippocrates, who's the founder of modern medicine, the city of Demosthenes, who was the great orator of the ancient world. It's the city of Socrates and Plato, the philosophers. And even though students still come to Athens from as far away as Rome, The city is not what it once was. The bloom is off the rose. And Paul is visiting there for the first time, say around 50 CE or AD, about 20 years after Jesus' ministry. He comes through the double gates. It's his first time in the city, and he does what anyone new to a city would do. He checks things out. Looks around to try and get the flavor of the place. And it's often been said in jest, you know, that there are more gods than people in Athens. You know, the way we say there are more Baptists down south than people. More gods in Athens than people. And there's often truth to that jest. For as he walks along, he sees a statue to Poseidon with that three-pronged spear, that trident. And he would see shrines to Zeus and Apollo and Hermes. And then up above, on a hill, is this tremendous, magnificent Parthenon, I can't say my words today, Parthenon, with a 30-foot statue of Athena inside. Just a spectacular thing. Today we see it whitewashed, it's white, bleached by the sun over the centuries. But back in Paul's day, it would be in color. It would have been painted in color. So a tremendous scene that he's coming across. He also comes across there a shrine to the unknown God. Now, Paul, as a Jew and as a Christian, would be very upset by the polytheism that he saw in Athens. But he chooses, I think, to take the high road on things. He sees all these different proliferation of gods as an example of what we find in all our lives, that longing, that search for God. It's interesting, one of the recent studies on the younger people, the millennials, the younger families, what are they looking for in the church? The experience of the divine, the experience of God. And this is what Paul sees our lives all about, the search for God, the finding of God. That's what we're here for. Sometimes, however, and I think he takes this shrine to the unknown God, he takes it as a recognition on the Athenians' part that something's missing. There's still something there that quite hasn't filled that empty space in their lives, that unknown God. And for Paul, sometimes we look for God in the wrong places. And this was a story I used to love reading to the kids when they were little. Do you remember P.D. Eastman and the story of the little bird? Anybody remember that? I used to love reading that. This is the bird who's hatched, who's born while his mother is away looking for food. And so he's hatched, and this little bird goes out looking for his mother. You haven't read this? It's a lovely story. He goes to the kitten. He goes to the... a number of things. He goes to the dog and he says, you know, are you my mother? And then he goes to the cow and the boat and the steam shovel and he asks, are you my mother? And finally, when he, the steam shovel picks him up and puts him back up in his nest. And there he meets his mother. You know, are you my mother? But often we go looking for God. And I take that as a parable, a very real parable of a spiritual search again in all our lives. But I don't know if we've ever had that experience ourselves where we might have been looking for something in all the wrong places. You know, do we take security? Do we take our work? Even maybe our concern for our grandchildren? Do we take popularity and place on those things a weight? You know, they're good in themselves. There's nothing wrong with them in and of themselves. But do we place upon them a weight that they just can't carry, that we're never meant to carry? Have we made them into one of the idols, the gods? Have we been looking for God in all the wrong places? Now, there's a story I like. And this is about a young woman who brings her fiancé home to meet her parents. They've never met before. And they have dinner together. And After the dinner, the mother gets the father aside and says, "Why don't you talk to this fiance and find out what his plans are?" So he takes the fiance into his study, and he says to the fiance, "Well, what are your plans?" And the fiance says, "I am a scholar." And the father says, "Well, that's admirable. But what are your plans? How will you provide my daughter with a nice house and sort of the lifestyle that she's been accustomed to?" And the young man answered, and he said, "I will study, and God will provide." And the father said, "Well, what about the children? What about when the children come along? How will you care for them?" And the young man said, "I will study, and God will provide." And every question the father asked, the young man answered, "I will study, and God will provide." And after this interview, the mother pulled the father aside and said, "Well, what did you learn about this young man and his plans?" And the father answered, "Well, the bad news is he has no plans and he has no prospects. The good news is that he thinks I am God." I don't recall any of my son-in-laws ever thinking of me that way, but but if that young man thought that his father-in-law was going to be God and provide, he was looking for God in all the wrong places. St. Paul, as he was standing before these people, begins to explain the kind of God he's talking about, this unknown God that they're seeking but can't quite define. And he says that, this God is not like Athena just watching over one city. It's not like Zeus with his bad temper and all his girlfriends. This is a God who has called the galaxies, the world, into being. And he doesn't live in shrines made by man. Now, I don't know if you can imagine Paul saying this. He's a gutsy guy. He's saying this looking up at one of the most spectacular pagan temples from that period. The Parthenon, just absolutely magnificent. If the Greeks knew anything, they knew how to build absolutely beautiful temples on hills. And here Paul is standing before Athenians, before this spectacular temple with a 30-foot statue of Athena, and saying, God does not live in temples made by human hands. Not the God who called the galaxies into existence. Our God and our understanding of God is sometimes just too small. Paul is talking about a God who, again, it's just mind-blowing, calls the universe into existence and yet cares for the likes of you and me. That's mind-blowing too. You know, the God who made the mountains also made the little atom. The God who made the glacier also makes the snowflake. The God who made the galaxies also made you and me and the baby we hold in our hands. Unbelievable. There's a story about a group of Connecticut people who went to an observatory. And the astronomer was explaining things to them, and he said, now, if you look to the northern skies, you'll see a cluster of stars out there called Hercules. There's about 6,000 stars out there. And each star is a sun, and it's bigger than our sun. And there's planets there and moons and all the rest. Just huge. And one of the Connecticut people said, now, you're saying that each of those is a sun that's bigger than our sun? And the astronomer said, yeah, and just to put things into perspective, if you thought our sun, if you thought of it as an empty shell, you could put 1,000,000 of our Earths inside of it. 1,000,000 of our Earths inside of it and have room left over. And one of the guys from Connecticut said, well, considering that, I guess it's not all that important what the Mets and the Yankees and the Red Sox do. So. Just, you know, every analogy has its limitations, but think of God as like the sun. And the sun is a tremendous location of energy and power. And yet, just a ray of that, just a ray of that, can take a seed, a tiny seed that I've planted and warmed the soil and nurture that plant to the point where it unfolds into a flower. Just a ray of the sun. And I think the same is true in our own lives. You know, just a ray of that sun can take us and, you know, warm us and comfort us and nurture us till we grow to our full humanity. Again, a father took a young little boy up on top of a tall mountain, and around this there's all just a panorama, a wonderful view all the way around. And the father said, you know, God's love is just like that. It's all around us. And the little boy said, we're right in the middle of it. In him we live and move and have our being. Paul's actually quoting a philosopher there, but the point is well made. That's the opening part of Paul's speech to the Athenians. Thanks be to God. Amen.